This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. How are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Yeah, in the aftermath of the war, in addition to trying to find reasons why things went wrong, now that we've returned almost all of our hostages home, and most of the fighting has really died down, even though we are still clearly defending borders everywhere and still having to confront terror activities and attacks against Israel. But we do have a moment just to take a deep breath. And one of the things that we do is we look back on the casualties and what the damage has been done. And interestingly, the Ministry of Defense has a separate division called the Rehabilitation Division. And this is a division that takes care of wounded soldiers. And they made a statement that said that they are now treating 22,000 additional soldiers who are recovering from injuries of one sort or another that have joined the Rehabilitation Division since October the 7th. This brings the total number of soldiers being treated in the Rehabilitation Division to an astonishing 82,400. That is the total number of people who have been injured or are suffering from mental health issues. And interestingly, something like half of those people who have been added since October the 7th are people who are being treated for mental health concerns and conditions. So it's an interesting statistic, and of course it adds to the 913 IDF soldiers who were killed during the period of the war. 22,000 others are suffering from one type of injury or another, and as I say, half of them, more than half of them, are suffering from mental health issues.
Yeah, so scary, and one wonders how long this is going to take. Is it within this generation, or is this a generational thing? I have my thoughts on that. What do you think? 0618951019. How long does Israel, and do the Jewish people and supporters of Israel, take to recover from this? Is this a 10-year story or multi-generational? Speaking of which, a German Chancellor, Friedrich Merz, has been in Israel over the weekend. What was the purpose of his visit?
Well, first of all, this is the first visit that Friedrich Merz has made to Israel since he was elected as Chancellor, and quite notably, one of the first visits made by any elected official from European Union since the outbreak of the war. We did have a number of visits during the course of the war, various people trying to convince Israel to take a certain line of action. But now, in the aftermath of the war, and we can almost say the aftermath of the war, Friedrich Merz has visited Israel. And he met with President Isaac Herzog, and he met with Prime Minister Netanyahu over the weekend. It was all quite a friendly visit. And the purpose of his visit was really, first of all, to kind of reassess Germany's support for Israel during the course of the war, because Germany was one of those countries in the European Union that really stood up and was willing to speak out against the criticism that Israel got from the European Union in general, and was one of those countries that was willing to stand up at the United Nations and to speak out against criticisms against Israel. So in a sort of ironic kind of way, Germany was really a supporter of Israel during the course of the war, until that moment came when Germany decided to refuse Israel's request for certain weapons to be sent to Israel, which were destined for use in Gaza. And that was quite a surprising move, given Germany's support for Israel generally during the course of the war. That moment really stood out when Germany said no. But quite interestingly, the German chancellor didn't want to avoid talking about that moment. And he said that's he described it as a moment. He said that was just a moment rather than a trend, or rather than something that we need to consider as being Germany's attitude towards Israel. And everything that he said over the course of the weekend in all of his meetings was very, very supportive of Israel and Israel's right to defend itself. But here comes the real kicker in terms of the overall relationship with Germany, and in particular, the background to the visit of Chancellor Merz. The fact is that Israel has now supplied Germany with an Arrow 3 ballistic missile defense battery, which has been deployed near to Berlin. Purely Israeli technology, defending Germany, defending Berlin against the Russian threat predominantly. And so, as Prime Minister Netanyahu put it, exactly 80 years after the end of the Holocaust, and during the period that followed the Holocaust, when Germany felt the need, the desire, the imperative, I suppose, to somehow help Israel when it was first established in 1948, and in that period that immediately succeeded the Shoah, Germany was out there raising funds and helping Israel on the international stage. Now, says Prime Minister Netanyahu, it is Israel defending Germany.
Wow.
What an irony that is, only 80 years after the end of the Shoah. It's all quite an interesting situation, because Germany clearly is feeling the Russian threat with the war going on in Ukraine. And there are many European countries who have suddenly discovered that their defense spending over the last few decades has not been nearly enough to make them ready for what is considered to be now a very significant Russian threat. Many of them are scrambling around to increase their defense spending. There's been this whole discussion at NATO about why the defense spending is not enough by NATO members. And in particular, President Trump has insisted that defense spending should be up to 5% of GDP. Many of those countries in Europe are nowhere near that at the moment. They've got a long way to go in order to get there. But more than the actual defense spend and making themselves ready, they need equipment, they need hardware, they need tried and tested technology. And of course, Israel is a great place to come to in order to see how things can work. And let's just remind listeners that the Arrow 3 missile system is an anti-missile system. In other words, it's a defensive system. And the question is, when you spend your defense spending, whether you're spending it on things that are attacking weapons, or whether you are spending it on things that are defensive weapons. And Israel historically has been well known for developing defensive technologies, even though it clearly has a very, very significant attacking capability. But in the most part, Israel is well known for its defensive capabilities, including the Iron Dome, and including Arrow 3, and including David Sling, and all of the other myriad of anti-missile systems that Israel has that creates this dome-like effect over Israel's skies. And now Germany is using Israel's Arrow 3. That is just an astonishing development.
It really is. President Trump announced that the Gaza ceasefire will move into phase two soon. What does this mean?
Well, let's start with saying that we still have one hostage, Rangvili, who has not yet been brought home. And until he's brought home, I continue to wear my yellow bracelet on my arm, and I will be very glad to have a ceremony to cut it off at the moment that it would be appropriate to do so. So we can't forget Rangvili and the fact that he needs to be brought home as part of phase one. However, having now gone through the process of almost all of the hostages being brought back, except for Rangvili, and of course we will not rest until he comes home, the talk is now about how we move on to the next stage of the ceasefire. And the next stage of the ceasefire is really mostly about disarming Hamas and removing them from power in Gaza. And yet everything that we've seen over the last few weeks and months has been exactly the opposite of that. Hamas has been doing everything it can to reestablish its control over Gaza, or to strengthen its control. Maybe reestablish is the wrong word, because I'm not sure that they ever really lost control over Gaza, but potentially to strengthen their control over Gaza. And that's exactly contrary to the idea of phase two. And this whole concept of disarming Hamas is now being very much diluted. And interestingly, the Israeli government has stood up yesterday and said that both Turkey and Qatar are somehow working with Hamas to find a way to avoid the need for Hamas to fully disarm, whether that involves handing their weapons over to some other third party that will potentially store those weapons or freeze those weapons or keep them in some sort of a way, whether that be the Palestinian Authority or whether it be some other authority. They are trying to find a way to avoid the need for Hamas to have to completely give up their weapons. Now, when we listen to Hamas leaders and when we listen to what they've said previously and what they continue to say, which is that if they have the opportunity to do October the 7th again, they would do it again and again and again. And so therefore, with those words ringing in our ears and with those statements being made unashamedly, there is no possible way that Israel can allow a situation to progress where Hamas is not fully disarmed, because any arms in Hamas's possession will clearly present a threat to Israel, with Hamas having stated what their objective is. So we can't afford to move into phase two without absolutely adhering to the concepts that were laid down in President Trump's 20-point plan, which include removing Hamas from Gaza and removing any arms that Hamas has or may have from their position. Now, there is an interesting parallel event going on at the moment, which is the Doha Forum, which is taking place in Qatar at the moment. And there are all the movers and shakers, including those from the US administration and others, who are talking about what will happen next in Gaza. And the Qataris have interestingly said that they are not going to be financing the rebuilding of Gaza. We will see how that goes. But that's at least a statement that was made by the Qatari prime minister. But the whole idea of Gaza moving forward on the basis of Hamas being in power in some way, shape or form and retaining their arms, to me, seems a non-starter. Sure. And I'm not sure how we're going to move away from that, because at the moment, it seems as if though all the players are intent upon somehow trying to find this compromise, which will mean that Hamas will directly or indirectly still have access to their weapons.
Absurd. Absolutely absurd. I don't know how it is even contemplatable, but let's see how this plays out. Finally, the High Court has ruled on the matter of non-Jewish children of citizens under the law of return. What did the court decide?
Well, this is a very, very interesting ruling that was issued by the Supreme Court yesterday in a rare situation where there was a 7 panel of judges sitting on a case. The ruling was 6 in favor of the ruling and 1 against the ruling. And the ruling actually overturned a previous lower court ruling on this particular matter. The High Court has decided that if someone has the right to citizenship in Israel under the law of return, it doesn't automatically confer upon their non-Jewish children the same right. That is what the High Court has decided. Now, how can that come about? Well, the law of return says that if you have one Jewish grandparent, you are automatically entitled to claim citizenship in Israel under the law of return. You clearly have to prove that you have one Jewish grandparent, and that process is sometimes a very difficult, lengthy, and convoluted process. But once you have managed to prove that, you're automatically entitled to citizenship under the law of return. Now, it could happen that your children are not entitled to citizenship because they do not have a Jewish grandparent. So, if you think about the possibility of an individual who has one Jewish grandfather and he claims citizenship under the law of return, his children would not automatically be entitled to citizenship because they do not have one Jewish grandparent. And then kicks in the next process of gaining citizenship to Israel, and that is a naturalization process. And the court has said that we should not mix the two concepts together, that there shouldn't be an automatic right to those who have citizenship under the law of return in the way that there is a right under the law of naturalization. And so what the court has said is that for those children who are not entitled to citizenship under the law of return, they will need to be naturalized under the naturalization process, which is a little bit more difficult and a little bit more convoluted and takes much more time, but that is an option. One of the judges, interestingly, said, and this was the judge who opposed the ruling, and she said that she didn't think it was right that you could grant a parent citizenship and not allow their children to have the right as well automatically as a result of them being a parent and the children living with them in Israel. And therefore, that justice particularly decided that she thought they should have the right to citizenship under the law of return. We know that the law of return has been somewhat controversial, and there have been some attempts to try and remove it. Let's not forget that the concept of one Jewish grandparent is inherited from what the Nazis decided during the Shoah, that if you had one Jewish grandparent, that you were then subject to the rules that applied to all Jews, which was concentration camps and potentially death chambers and all the rest of it. But of course, Jews in the diaspora, and indeed others in the diaspora, should have a say on this matter because it potentially affects all of you. So I hope that you will all jump in and say what you think about this new High Court ruling, which came as a little bit of a surprise to some people.
And that is where we leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. It is 8 o'clock. You can catch Anthony Reich for the Israel Report tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.